get real with you. You know, real guys talk real sports. We will. Great. Market game changer. Start to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just got to recognize I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We'll make excuses. We're not going to make excuses. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron with this.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that team that everybody want to smack in the mouth, the Miami Heat. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, the Real Guys Talk Real Sports. You are in with the Resistance. This is Renegade Radio. It's your man, Marcus, the Game Changer, holding you down. Got my man, D. Wills, in the house. Holler at the people.
That's the association second season has officially started. This is where it gets exciting. So, we're going to have the most hated team. Are they really that hated? We're going to find out here in a couple of days. All the talk all comes down to this moment. Can they make a run? We'll get into that tonight.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into that tonight. We're going to talk about the playoffs. We're going to talk about who's backing in, who's coming in guns blazing, what players out there can really make a name for themselves this postseason. It's going to be a lot to cover, a lot of ground to cover as we preview the NBA playoffs coming up. We also going to get into the Masters this past weekend and kind of recap that, the loudest, what me and D like to call the loudest fourth place finish ever, for our man Tiger, but it's good to see that he's still alive, back from exile. He's rocking a red shirt again. I like to see that. We're gonna get into Manny being Manny. I mean, I can't wait to talk about Manny, man. This dude. I mean, man, I'm gonna save it. I'm gonna keep it in the bag. But and then we got some college basketball talk with guys turning pro. We're gonna look at a couple of guys and talk about their games and whether or not they're gonna make it at the next level. So we're gonna look at Kyrie Irving versus Kemba Walker. Who's going to be the better pro? So we're going to get into that. So we got a lot of stuff jam-packed into this next 2 hours. Glad you're listening. If you want to get in on any of these conversations, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. That's 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to get on with the Real Sports Guys. So, man, we got the NBA playoffs. It's about to get thick. This is what we've been waiting on. All these Heat fans out there, all the Miami Heat fans out there, you've been quiet all season. All season you've been quiet because things wasn't going quite the way you thought they would. And it happens like that sometimes. Sometimes you got to bite your tongue. You got to wait it out. You got to slow walk your enemies. You got to do that sometimes. Now is the time for you guys to call in. And put your bets down. This is put your money where your mouth is. We ain't talking regular season ball no more. We ain't talking meaningless games against the Warriors. We ain't talking meaningless games against the Nets. We talking about playoffs. Jim Moore say playoffs. We talking about the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? We talking about the playoffs. This is what we talking about right now. So all those Heat fans out there, feel free to call in tonight. We welcome y'all to call in. We want y'all to put y'all bets on the table, put your money where your mouth is, and make your prediction on the Heat. Are they winning the championship? Are they bowing out in the second round? You tell us. We want to hear, because I know what I think, and y'all should know what I think by now. I don't know where Devon sit on this. We're going to let him weigh in real quick or on the Heat's chances. What do you think, D?
Well, they're the hardest team to kind of, the playoffs come down to matchups. And so, trying to judge how they played here at the end, it's kind of like it's fool's gold, because every team you play has a different motivation. So even the game against Boston, I mean, they played well. They did everything. But yet, Boston did the same thing last year. And in the playoffs, they were able to turn it into a different level. Same thing with the Lakers. So it's hard to judge. I mean, what I've been looking at is, I don't really think about the big three. I'm thinking about have they role players. Now Big Z done hit somebody in the back of the head with a ball, so he's showing some emotion, but have their role players developed enough to step into their roles? That's the part I don't know. What I think will happen is I think on the big three talent, they can get, depending on how, because they'll end up playing, Chicago in the second round?
Nah, they'll end up playing Boston in the second round.
See, that's a little too early for them. I think that's a problem for them. If they had played Boston maybe in the Eastern Conference Finals and got some rhythm going, I think that's a little bit too soon for them. Because a lot of it's going to depend on how they play in that first round. I think they'll win their first round series. But I think, it's how they I think that's a little soon for them to get Boston. So, I think they lose in the second round. Because I think, even though Boston is making some adjustments, what you feel about Boston is those pieces are going to come together. And they're going to do enough. And they're more ready for that second round, I think, than the Heat are. That's a bad matchup. If I were the Heat, they're almost better off playing the Bulls second round than playing Boston second round. Because the Bulls are good, but the Bulls are still going to have to find out whether they play off good. Where Boston already knows they play off good. They know what it takes for the most part. Their core knows what it takes winning the playoffs. And I think that's going to be problematic for the Heat. So my prediction is that they go out second round against Boston. It's a six-game series. I think it'll go 6-4-2. But I think they get out in the second round.
So you think they're going to lose to Boston. I want to ask you, with Boston, what's up? I mean, since the Perkins trade, they haven't been the same team at all. I mean, what are they, 9-10 or 9-11 in the last 20 games since the Perkins trade?
But last year with Perkins, right, but down the stretch, they played basically 50%. They pretty much even last year with Perkins. Yeah, what I think this team has done, and it's not about turning it on and off, but I think that the idea of the playoffs is going to unite them as a squad. And I think that New York series, they play New York in the first round, is going to be kind of a trigger that kind of gets them focused. I think New York is perfect because New York is talented offensively, so it's really going to force them to become more cohesive defensively in a way that's going to prepare them for the Miami series. But because New York is playing better defense but hasn't quite made the level of commitment to defense that Boston has, it's going to allow them to get on track offensively and getting their sets in the way that they haven't been able to do. And I think this is where you're going to see the trade become kind of emerge. So I think it's going to, where it's going to really become an issue for Boston is depending on who comes out of the West or if they meet Chicago in Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's where the Perkins trade is going to emerge. Is it going to work or not? But I think they'll have enough games under the belt under that kind of competition that'll tell you a lot about them. But yeah, I think the matchup in the first round is going to be a unifying factor for that group. And so we'll see how that all comes together.
I like the way you're thinking with that one. I like the way you're thinking with that one. This is one thing. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute here, and I'm going to throw out something. A lot of times with teams, they're unsung players who may not necessarily be superstars, but they're key pieces to that team's identity. And when those players leave, or if you take those players out or off of those teams, they become something different. I think you saw it with Orlando a couple years ago when they made the finals with Hedo. They let Hedo walk, and it was just a different kind of team after that. Because what made that team special was the fact that they could put out three guys over 6'10", who could all, and two of them could stretch the floor. One of them was Dwight Howard. Two of them could stretch the floor, and they created matchup problems for other teams. They got rid of Hedo. They let Hedo walk, and then they tried to go traditional, and that made them, instead of being special or being different, that made them average. And I think when the Lakers, it was kind of the same point I had when the Lakers was thinking about trading Bynum. What makes the Lakers special right now is the fact that, and a big part of their identity is the fact that they can go 6'10 across their front line with Odom, Gasol, and Bynum all in at the same time, and they still have Kobe Bryant. Now, if they would have moved Bynum for Carmelo, they would have had to go with a more traditional lineup, which would have made them, again, just kind of an average team. I think maybe the Celtics have lost one of those special unsung players. It's like taking Bruce Bowen off those Spurs teams, you know, from the early 2000s. He was one of those guys that, no, he wasn't ever going to get the headlines. Nah, he wasn't going to win any MVP awards. He wasn't going to make any All-Star teams. But he was a key piece to that identity of that team because he was still, even though he was limited in a lot of areas, he was elite at one particular thing that allowed them to do a lot of other stuff off of that. And I think that was what Hedo had. Hedo was 6'10", he could handle the ball, he could create. He was elite at that for his size. And that allowed them to do a lot of other things away from him and off the ball, and that freed other people up to do different things. Ever since that season, Rashard Lewis ain't been the same player. You know, to the point where they traded him. And maybe that was Aroids, maybe that was Hedo. But it was one or the other, you know. And was Perk that guy? I mean, Perk is an elite post defender, and Perk has got a mean streak, and you see it rubbing off in OKC. You see that mean streak giving an identity to the Thunder. And it seems like with Perk being gone, the Celtics maybe lost a little bit of that identity that they had. Maybe it's just the Celtics being savvy vets and just kind of laying low until the playoffs. It is a long season, and they was bound to play bad at some point, you know, because they had been playing. They've been hitting on all cylinders pretty much all year throughout injuries and everything. So, you know, they have been kind of plowing through. The thing that worries me a little bit about this team is that the pieces that they picked up, I don't see Troy Murphy doing a whole lot. I don't see Christus getting a whole lot of minutes anymore. I don't see Jeff Green really contributing a whole lot. So those pieces that they picked up, they haven't integrated yet, and that worries me a little bit.
This is kind of at the end of the season, but even when I watched them last night, what I liked about it is the fact they ran that second unit for pretty much the whole entire game and allowed Green to really get into his game a little bit in a way. It's almost like he had a chance to stretch his legs in a way that I think might be contributing to this first round. And I also think the way this first round matchup is going to have is going to allow – I agree with you. I mean, the parts you raised is actually what Danny had to evaluate. For some reason, he felt like he needed to pull the trigger. And I think he felt like he was, taking a chance. And I think what he rolled a dice on is that how much gas do you have in the tank with both the O'Neals. That are the O'Neals together equal to what they lost? Now, that's debatable or not in terms of that. So I know he rolled the dice a little bit with that in terms of being able to do this because I think you're making a really good point about how you eat away at the fabric of a team and who they are because they're key components of a team whether they starters or they role players or whatever, that continues. It's kind of like taking Derek Fisher off the Lakers. You know, there's an attitude. It's the way you practice. It's the way you conduct yourself in pregame. It's the way you conduct yourself on the court. It's some of those fabric type players who help set the tone. You know, I think that's what the Heat's missing. You know, the Heat are missing those kind of guys beyond the big three. Those are also guys who can go to the stars and have real conversations, you know, and be real with them. And I think the Celtics had that. Even though they had stars, the way they described it, they had brothers, you know, people could say whatever they need to say to each other to make the same move. And so I think they had grown to that level. And can you replace that with some of these other folks? I mean, you're hitting a critical thing, and I think that's what Ainge rolled the dice on. I think he convinced himself that a couple of these vets could do that for this run, with the idea that maybe he's thinking down the road he might be able to get somebody back to do that. I mean, that's what part of being a GM. You roll the dice, and you pay the price, or you make it work. And so I think you're right on that in many ways, and that's what we're going to find out. You know, that's what we're going to find out. Because that mean streak you talk about is something that happens when KG goes to the bench and you continue that attitude playing. And this is something I've been thinking about. And I'd love to get your opinion on this. Because one of the arguments, it fits on a little bit on what you talk about. One of the arguments against Derrick Rose being the MVP candidate, or being the MVP for the league, versus LeBron James, was the whole idea of plus minus on the floor. But one of the things, and this is back to your point, one of the things I also think is a very important part about plus minus that you don't get is when you have a great leader, you instill a way of how you play even when they're not on the court. So there's an expectation that we play at a high level no matter who's on the court. So in some ways, if you are an effective leader in establishing that, then that does affect the plus minus. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you could have sustained play, that has as much to do with the kind of leadership the leader your star is. And anyway, so that might also attribute to, and this is back to your point, to LeBron's leadership, right? Because when you don't have those kind of plays, when you aren't able to establish a way of playing and you don't have those key components, which your leaders foster, and then those role players take on those roles. So when LeBron comes to the, it's kind of like developing residual income. You want to be able to have positive gains even when you sleep, right? That's what mm-hmm. that's what wealth is about. And the same thing I think about great leadership and great teams is that good leaders are able to create environments where things happen even when they're not there. So this whole idea about plus minus. Argument that they did against Rose. One of the things I thought about it, because of the fact that there wasn't a big drop-off when he wasn't on the floor, how much does that attribute to the kind of leader that he is and expectation that they develop about sustaining the level of play no matter who's on the floor? So this is back. You've got to have people like Perk and folks like that who buy into that, who help you sustain that. So the question for Boston is, who can do that? And that's, you raise a real big issue, a really great thing, because part of playing at a high level on a consistent basis in the playoffs is having enough of those folks on your team where it tips the culture of your team, and that's just what you do. And when you take a piece away, you chip away at your ability to sustain that through the hard times, even when your stars are not playing well. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a critical point. We're going to keep coming back to this. But I think that is also a function of leadership on your team. That is kind of like my Steelers, you know, next person up, that's the attitude. You get hurt, next linebacker in the depth chart, step up. You know, that's just what we do.
Right.
Expectation. And so basketball is a little bit different because of the specialization that certain people bring, and can you replace that specialization? Like, you can't just have next person up because everybody ain't 6'11", 7 foot like Perk.
Right.
That's the attitude. So some of that is, you know, some of that is not, you know, one-to-one kind of like that. But I think you hit a really good point. But then that's going to be a function of, is your culture, you know, so Danny Ainge had to say, my culture is strong enough to sustain this. You know, for some reason in his mind, he believed that. Now, we're going to find out whether or not it's true. We're going to find that out in about a couple of days. We're going to see glimpses of it. And he made a calculated reason, like he still got enough, because he probably think his team is still tougher. Now, he might be underestimating Chicago, but I think he think if it come down to a mental toughness issue with Milwaukee, I think he still thinks his team is just got greater will than Miami. I think that's probably where he's coming down to it. It's like, you know, I just think between KG, Paul, Rondo, and Ray, we just got too much will, even without Perk, to lose. I just believe in them enough that they got too much pride to lose to Miami. I'm just betting on that. And that's sometimes people roll the dice like that. Now, that's stuff that costs you a career, too.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And I think another reason that I think Ainge looked at the TDs and he decided to roll the dice because I think he knew that they were going to be able to possibly – I think he knew that this team wasn't going to be able to sustain the level of play that they had established early in the season. And I knew he was going to be looking at it. I think he knew that they were going to be looking at a 2 or 3 seed. And because they were going to be looking at a 2 or 3 seed, I think he said he figured it was either going to be them or it was going to be Chicago or Miami at 1. And then at 2 or 3, it was going to be one of those three teams sitting at that top spot. And I think he figured they wouldn't be because of the age and attrition on the team that would build up over the season. They were going to have a lull at some point, and they were going to fall out of that race. And then they were going to start to rest guys and kind of pace themselves. So I think he saw that coming and figured that they would be able to avoid Orlando, which is really in the East the only team that you would need Perk for. So I get that. I get that part of the gamble, absolutely. But, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there because it was something that I was watching them play the Heat, and it just seemed like a little something was missing. A little, and maybe they were playing possum. Maybe they don't want to show their hand. But it just seemed like something was missing in that game. And I watched them play against the Bulls, I think it was Thursday or Wednesday night. And again, in that game, it looked like a little something was missing from all of the guys. Rondo didn't seem very dynamic. You know, guys that didn't really seem like they were getting after it like they usually do. So, you know, I just started to think about it a little bit and started to think of some examples of other teams where they've dealt somebody or picked somebody up. You know, when the Lakers picked up Artest, he added something to them. You know, elite role players, I think, get underrated, especially in basketball. If you got a guy who is elite, that pushes a good team to an elite caliber team. And with teams like San Antonio, I don't really know if they have any role players who have an elite skill right now. You know, the Lakers, you know, I think if you count Odom as a role player, I think he has an elite skill given his size and his ability to create, step away, and cause matchup problems. I would say Odom would be that guy for the Lakers. You're looking at the Bulls, I don't know. I don't know if they have an elite. Maybe you look at Noah and you call him an elite role player. Maybe. I don't know. I think he's more than a role player, but maybe he's that guy with his rebounding and post defense. Maybe he's that elite role player. But I think he does bring a lot of intensity defensively, and I think that is a huge part of their identity. Because outside of him, Boozer ain't a defender, and that's what that team prides itself on. So I would say that Noah is that guy who kind of, you know, Rose is too. Rose is the overall leader, but I think defensively on the defensive end, Noah is that anchor. You take him out, that's a different team, even if Rose is still there.
I think the other person that's kind of elite person for them is Dang, in the sense that in his natural role, being that the fourth wheel in the leadership dynamic, but the third scorer, and get really in his comfortable role-playing position, makes him elite. Because when you get past Boozer and Rose and you got to go to your third scorer, he's going to be better than your third scorer on most teams, except for the Miami matchup. And that's where, you know, bringing in, you know, some of the other elements of the team come into play. But yeah, I think, you know, finding that elite, you know, kind of role player that just is a difference maker. And it makes everybody play differently. So, you know, now guys who aren't – you don't have that elite guy, it means that other people have to play uncomfortable minutes.
And right now the Heat don't have that. I wanted to make sure I point that out.
they don't have
an elite role player who has that one skill where, you know, night in and night out, you're going to get this from this guy. They still haven't figured out. They thought Mike Miller was going to be that guy, and I thought Mike Miller was going to be that guy.
But back to what you said,
he on the milk carton.
But on most of Mike's teams, he was the first option or second option. So how do you take a guy who, in his mind, most of his career been a first or second option, if not the first option, and now he becomes a fourth option? It takes I heard some of the guys on TNT, Kenny and them talking about it, and you always hear, what's my guy, play for the Bullets, 3-point shooter.
Leg.
The Wizards. Legler talking about it takes a certain mindset to be a role player, right? It's like, you know, you only have certain things you got to get done when you get in there. So when you are first or second option, you got time to kind of warm into the game, because anything that you do, you still first or second option. So Kobe can go 2-for-11 because he know he first or second option. He can kind of work his way into the game, versus when you're a role player, you know you got a couple things you can do, and if you don't do that, you come into the bench. So when you come to the game knowing those are the things you have to deliver on, and I think that's the challenge for the Heat or any team. When you take that person out, or somebody got to step into that position who wasn't there before, or you take somebody who's used to being first or second option and saying you got to be a role player. And that's a different mindset. You know, that's like being a starter and coming off the bench. You know what I'm saying? Being a starter, starting the game versus coming off the bench is a different mindset. And so how do you prepare people for those roles? That's why this stuff can't be like playing, you know, Xbox. You just can't be putting people together like that. And I think I didn't see, in part of because Miller was hurt, you know, they didn't have an opportunity to really get him into that role. But I know they don't have it. And then when you talk about what happened with Perks, that means all these other folks got to fall into this role, right? Because Davis is used to playing a certain level of minutes. But there's a big difference. Hubie Brown talks about this. You know, people think, you know, if you play 15 minutes or 20 minutes a game and you average in 11 points, you know, 8 rebounds. Most average fans think just because they escalate your minutes to 40, that's going to double. they just start trying to follow the math that way.
Right.
And
right.
You and I know, and so the things that you bring out are really important. I mean, that's really getting, because people got to say, when you look at Miller and say, but you say, how is Miller thinking of himself? Miller thinks of himself as a first or second option. Now, he's trying to suppress that, because that means you only, versus getting 15 to 17, 16 shots a game, you're only going to get 4. You need to make 3. See, Steve Kerr knew that. New Steve Kerr came in and said, he's only going to get 4 looks. And he needed to make 3 if he wanted to get 4 more next night. Right? And to me, that's a different mindset than a guy like Miller, who's used to getting 11 to 13 shots a night. You know, and so I think, you know, it's back to your whole thing about when you build teams. That's why I respect Ainge, but I'm trying to figure out where he's going with this, right? Because I think he knows this. So I'm trying to figure out where he's going with this, because
who's that, Danny Ainge?
Yeah, Danny Ainge. I'm trying to figure out where he's going with this, because he knows. I'm pretty confident he knows these kind of things. So I'm trying to figure out where he's going with some of this stuff, because I see people making this mistake all the time, and I'm thinking, if y'all can make that mistake, that means I got a job. I could be a GM. You know? Like, I see these things, and, you know, maybe I'm just wrong, but it's one of those things where you can't keep underestimating some of this stuff. So, and how this plays out in the playoffs is going to be real interesting. You know, I think, you know, Jeff Green is going to have his moment, right? He's going to have his moment for the Celtics, where they're going to really need him. And I think you're going to see it early in this New York series. I think if he's used the right way, he could do some damage in this New York series. And, you know, and I know he's feeling the pressure, because he knows. And then we don't know what's going to happen with the O'Neill brothers, or another. So some of those dynamics, we don't know what's going to happen with some of these things. But when you think about the roles that people are used to playing, are they in the role to do their best work? And the only team that I see in the East who's got those natural fits going is Chicago. Like, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Like, for the most part, like, Chicago's the only team right now where you and I are looking from the outside in. It's like, okay, everybody knows what they're supposed to do, and they know what they're supposed to deliver, and they all in their role. You know. Everybody else has got question marks. You know, and part of that is some of them haven't been together enough to work those issues out. The other part is that there's just some mismatches in how they put the team together. But Chicago, when you look at it the way we look at it, is the only one where it's clear, designated roles. And that's what Boston used to be. Like, you look at Boston, you knew it was some clear roles. And, you know, Chicago right now is that team where it's clear. You look at their roster and you know who's supposed to do what. And they know who's supposed to do what. And they deliver it that way. So the East is going to be – this is going to be a great playoff out here because, you know, you don't know who's going to come out of this East. You know, the West is on a whole nother level. I mean, the West is – we might as well say it's the wild, wild West. I don't know what's going to happen over there. But,
yeah,
you know, the East, there's going to be some battles. You know, we get back to the old days of, you know, the Cavaliers and the, you know – It's going to be Detroit. I mean, it's just different teams, but there's going to be some battles here in the East.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's going to be a fun playoff to watch in the East, even some of these first-round series. You got Philly, you got New York, you got Boston, you got Miami, you got Chicago. I mean, it's going to be a throwback year for sure. And he said, you can't forget, it's going to be a pretty good Orlando and Atlanta series going on too. So, I mean, that's going to be another one. That's going to be more than worthwhile.
Atlanta's just, I don't know what to say about Atlanta. And maybe that's just part of their history. It's just like, even back to the days of Dominique, they're there, but are they ever relevant? Right? Like, they make a run, like, it'd be hard to be an Atlanta Hawks fan. You feel like you're being teased all the time. Like, when is Atlanta going to break through?
I mean, yeah, you know me in Atlanta, man. I think they fool's gold. You know, I think they're a solid team. I think they'll have a good series with Orlando because I think Orlando's fool's gold too. Even though I got to give props to Dwight Howard on an amazing season. My man had a really awesome season. You know, he played well. You know, he played some offense this year. If Derrick Rose had not had as good of a season as he did, I think Dwight Howard would have been right there for the MVP award. And I think, you know, he finishes a close second. But Atlanta, to me, you know, is absolutely fool's gold. I mean, they just they look like they are. They always look like they should be better. They always seem like they should be better. But you know they're not going to be any better. Which, I mean, for me, it's just hard to buy them, man. I don't know about you, but for me, it's really hard to buy them. Because I know
it's been historically that way. Like, even back to the Dominique days, they always were good, but you just knew they weren't going to be Boston. They were always good, you just knew they weren't going to be Detroit. It's like, is this Atlanta's history? You know, I just, I don't know. I know, I never have confidence that they're going to break through. You know, it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's a franchise that is always on the cusp, but you just, for some reason or another, they can't break through. And, you know, aside from that duel that Dominique had with Bird, you just feel like they never can break through, and then this is like a reincarnation of that. And I think they play a better ball, but you just feel like, you know, they tease you and you just don't know where they're going to go. So it's just an observation I made about Atlanta. If you just look at it over the last, you know, 25 years, you know, when are they going to break through?
Yeah, they're not. They're not gonna break through. I think that window is actually closing, in my opinion. I think, you know, again, they decided, given all the free agents that was out there, they was gonna give Joe Johnson all that damn money.
That's right.
And to me, that was just a bad investment. You know,
so it probably what it is when you think, when you don't, when you want to be Boston, but you think like Cleveland, you can't be Boston. You know, it's like when you think that you need to keep Joe Johnson, that right there just tells you where you are.
Right.
We can't just blame it on the strip clubs. So at some point, we got to figure out why this is happening. And you're right. I mean, I think just those kind of decisions may say a lot about how the organization is being run. And I'm not saying they're not competitive, but if you, at some point, we talk about a foundation. They got a good, nice little young nucleus.
Yeah.
And to not be able to build on that, you know, where is your old school cat? You know, who's in the locker room? Can they? I don't know who that cat is. You know, who can, you know, move these young cats to working at a different level. You know, I think you're right. I mean, I'd just like to see them make a run. You know,
mm-hmm.
Even the Pacers went to the finals. Even the Nets
right.
Finals.
The Nets went to two
finals. I mean, with probably not as strong a talented foundation as what Atlanta started with. So, yeah, that's just my observation of Atlanta. I always say they're always in a conversation, but they never end up in the party. So that's just something. It's going to be one more year like this, I guess, and we'll see. But I like Orlando. I like what what Dwight is doing. I love the way his game has evolved. I'm a little disappointed if they're not able to get, you know, as much as they got out of the trade. I thought they would get a lot more out of the trade, but they didn't get that. So I don't know where they're going as an organization. But, you know, they'll make a nice, decent run, you know, in the playoffs. Anytime you got Dwight, he's going to cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to make it hard to score. And now he developed that offensive game. he's going to cause some help, some terror down there. So I think it's going to be a physical series. It's going to be, you know, and Atlanta they got the advantage on Orlando this year, right? Like they beat them what, 3-1?
I think so. Yeah, I think they beat them 3-1.
So, you know, they somehow got a little confident. So that's going to be a nice series.
Yeah, it will be a nice series. I feel Orlando, you know, again, they tried to bring Hedo back, but Hedo ain't what he was, you know. And then in bringing Hedo back, they gave up Rashard Lewis. And I think those two together were a good tandem. Those two separately were just average guys.
Right.
You know, and again, Gil's been hanging out the same place Mike Miller's been hanging out. You know, you talk about a guy used to be in the first option and doesn't know how to adjust to be anything but the first option. That's Gil. I mean, this dude is a shell of himself, man. I mean, he doesn't even look like the same level. I mean, even half the player he was previously.
And part of that is going to play for Van Gundy is like going to the halfway house. When you like to go. You know what I'm saying? Under 24-hour surveillance. I mean, I know he's suffocating. He calls every play down the floor. There is not a lot of freedom. You know, so I know, you know, in some ways going to Atlanta was a good thing, but the coaching style is going to be difficult for him. Because, you know, you're talking about somebody who micromanages.
Uh-huh.
That's not good for a person like this. You can't make him the poor man's version of Benny Johnson, because he's not that. You know, they're not cultivating him that way. It was like, come in and heat up. Be a heat check. Let's see what you got. He's not even aggressive.
Yeah.
And when I watch him, he don't even look at the basket.
Yeah, I mean, that swag, that attack mode that he was always in, that hungry to get a bucket attitude he had is just gone.
told you that. I call it the Mike Tyson 2020 look. Got him in a trance. So I put some of this food. It untamed me. Definitely got that Tyson 2020 look. He just looked like, man, I can't believe I'm bamboozled.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's just not. He's just not the same guy. I mean, not even close. It looks like he's just not even playing ball no more. It really does, man.
It was like, just put me out of my misery.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody send me to Sacramento.
Right.
You know, just put me out of my misery. That's what he's all about. But, you know, the playoffs have a way of reinvigorating folks. You know, maybe this might wake him up. You know, because if he wake up, that changes the series. If Gil find his old self, that would change the series. And sometimes the playoffs does that.
And so, you know, I'm glad we're talking about this because this can lead us into another conversation about wild cards. You know, a couple teams have some guys who can be wild cards and who can wake up and, you know, change the complexion of not just the series but the entire playoffs if these guys wake up and play well. Gil is one of them, you know. I think last year Nate Robinson was one of those guys who, you know, any given night, Nate could have a quarter where he goes nuts. You know, he may not be able to sustain it for a whole game, but if you ask Nate to go off for a quarter, you know, he could do that. Who are some of those guys that you see in this year's playoff who could have those nights where, you know, they really make it, not only do they make a name for themselves, but, you know, they really become a major factor throughout the playoffs?
And some of them, I'm going to say, some of the people are folks we know about who just could emerge in a new role. So, obviously, for Boston, I think it's Green. He's a versatile-type player, and if he finds something with this team, he creates an entirely different element. Things that he can already do defensively, but offensively, he creates some different options, some different combinations for Doc, I think would be, you know, very valuable. An old school come back in kind of cat, I would say, and this could create a first round nightmare around his, you know, whether or not, you know, Elton Brand has kind of been coming in and out back in, but, you know, in Philly, just, you know, having a guy that if he woke up and was able to find himself, I mean, I know he's had some good, solid stuff coming back around a little bit, but, you know, just, Can you go back to the future? Kind of thing that I'm looking at. The other person is, this would be a nightmare for Boston, would be Chauncey. Not to say,
yeah,
but he's a big game type cat in the playoffs. And because of the way playoff games go and games in the structure of the game within the game, in the sense that how timeouts work, how playoff games work, how, you know, it's just a different kind of game that he understands. If a Chauncey finds his big shot kind of thing, which he has, but if he's able to merge, that becomes a problem for folks because he's done more with less in the playoffs, you know, as you and I know. And so he becomes a legitimate problem for you because if he's going off, then it's going to be hard to figure out what you're going to do with Carmelo and Stoudemire. And so that's another one. Don Orlando, I would say Hedo. If Hedo finds his funk, if they can find a way to, if he kind of opens up and wakes up in a way, he becomes a real problem because you can't really match. That's what, you know, that's what I love what you were saying about this because he becomes such a matchup problem at that size and the handles. And that would be a big issue. So there's some people that I think I kind of took the back to the future kind of thing. If you have some folks that kind of really found it and remixed their own selves back, that would become problematic for some folks.
Yeah, I feel you. I definitely feel that train of thought. You know, I think Bibby, that's another guy who could, for Miami, if they can get some production out of him, whether it's just hitting open jumpers, that's really Miami. Miami actually has a solid matchup with Philly. Like, I think they got a nice draw with Philly. I think they got a nice draw in that they can beat Philly. What I don't think is good about that draw is it doesn't push them in their weakness, in their areas of weakness. It doesn't get them ready at all for the next series. I don't think it helps them in the areas where they're not good. So I think they got a good draw in that they can beat Philly and they match up well with Philly. You got two teams that are both small. And neither team is trying to play a half-court game. Both teams are trying to get up and down. I don't think that helps Miami, what they're going to have to face throughout the rest of the playoffs. You know, I think they'll be able to run over the Sixers. You know, that's a good matchup for them. The Sixers don't really have any bigs. I think you're right with Brand. If Brand can recapture some of his old glory and take it to Bosh, you know, Iguodala's a decent matchup with LeBron. He's not going to shut down LeBron. Nobody will. But he's a solid matchup for LeBron. And with Evan Turner and Jrue Holiday, they got some guards who they can throw at D-Wade. It'll really depend on what they can do. The one guy in the series who I think is going to be the X factor, because I think, you know, they can, because Philly can go really small but still be effective and putting Brand at the center, is Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, I'm concerned.
Thaddeus Young is a guy who is a real efficient scorer. He can play on the outside. He can play on the inside. He can take a smaller guy to the block. He could pull a bigger guy away. I think he's going to be the guy in that series. Him and Bibby, I think, are going to be two guys. If Bibby starts hitting shots for the Heat, he could be a huge
make a huge difference for them
down the stretch. And then I think Thaddeus Young is one of those guys. Looking in the West, you know, looking at the way the West is shaping out, man, with the Lakers a half game up on the Thunder, if the Lakers lose another game, they might play Denver in the first round. And they don't want none of Denver. If I'm anybody in the West right now, I don't want none of Denver. Denver's got a deep front line. They deep in the backcourt. They deep everywhere. I mean, they got two starting point guards in Lawson and Felton. Flalo's coming back. They got Wilson Chandler. Yeah, they got Gallinari. They got bigs who can shoot the three, and Gallinari and Harrington, who are both 6'10", 6'9", who can stretch the defense. They got Hilario. They got Nene. They got, you know, the Mozgov cat, who's at least long. And then they got J.R. Smith, who is a guy who I think if there was ever a time for him to step up and make a name for himself, this was the year, you know. In this playoffs, is that time. But that Denver team is one of the few teams I think could match up with the Lakers, given the size that they have. When you have Chris Anderson, you have Nene, you got Al Harrington who can stretch the defense, you got Kenyon Martin, you got Mozgov who's a big body. Gallinari's still 6'10". He don't play huge, but he's still 6'10". And they got a ton of wings, and they got guards. That's a tough team. That's a team that if I had to go against them, I really wouldn't be all that happy out West. But I think J.R. Smith is one of those guys. Another guy I think who could be a major impact sleeper is Harden in Oklahoma City. Jeff Harden was a number 3 pick in the draft a couple years ago, you know, and people were kind of waiting to see why was he picked so high. You know, he was taking over Steph Curry and some other guys who may have fit well in Oklahoma City, but they took him. And towards the end of the season, he finally started to show a little bit of why they took him. This playoff could be a coming out party for him, for a guy like him on a national stage. And if he continues to play at the high level he's been playing at, he could really elevate himself and really make a huge difference in this playoff. You know, there's one guy, and I think that back to the future idea that you got, is back to the not-so-distant future, Brandon Roy in Portland. That's another guy who's kind of been on the shelf all season, kind of been laying low, biding his time. You know, that's another guy who, you know, right now they're looking at, you know, playing Dallas, maybe playing the Lakers, maybe playing Oklahoma City, depending upon how all of that shakes out with those three teams and where they finally end up. Portland is another team. I don't know if you really want to see them, you know. And, again, every year they have a ton of injuries, And every year they still wind up winning close to 50 games. You know, if that, again, if that team ever finds a way to stay healthy, they get get the voodoo doctor who has voodoo dolls of all their players jabbing them in the knees with needles. They can ever get that guy paid off or get him off their back. They're going to be all right. And I think this year, Brandon Roy is going to be one of those guys who may have a big playoff just because he hasn't really played a whole lot this year. They've been monitoring his minutes a lot, and they may just let him loose in the playoffs. And if he has anything left, you know, if he has anything to give, you know, I think that may be something that teams may or may not be accounting for.
And I think, you know, Batum is another person who kind of played well down the stretch. He's a big guy that's long, that, you know, presents some issues. I like the Gallinari as well. I mean, he's a guy that creates matchup issues if he's on his game. Another guy that I wanted to talk about is I'm losing my mind out there. When we think about for the Lakers, my guy that came over from Orlando, like losing my mind today.
From Orlando,
yeah, wing player.
Barnes. Yeah.
So Barnes is a guy for them. So I'm gonna say Barnes because I think there's a crazy element too.
Oh yeah.
Talked about JR and we got Barnes and then I would add Nate in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
The thing they got is, you know, the fact in the trade is, you know, they got Pert, but they also got Nate. And Nate had some big moments in the playoffs. Again, they face the Lakers, you know, a guy who ain't afraid of the Lakers. And every once in a while, having a guy on your second unit who could go off and hit 12 and a quarter, who just don't care, is something that, you know, you have to – would be a surprise for a team like Oklahoma City. That gives them – that might get you over top the moment against the Lakers, where you have a guy like that who just got enough crazy in him that he don't care about the moment. He ain't afraid of the Lakers. And so he'll get on the court and might go for him. He'll create matchup problems, and, you know, Derrick ain't going to stay in front of him. So a bunch of people might not stay in front of him. So those crazy elements around J.R., Barnes, you know, Nate, those cats who just, if they get in a just-don't-care mode, they're going to be dangerous. Because there ain't nothing you can do with them. So I think that's another element to this as well, is who crazy going to be crazy?
Right.
Ask the one that, and some of those cats could cause some problems. But they just don't care.
Right.
They ain't afraid of the moment. They ain't playing with the script. They ain't doing nothing. They don't care.
I mean, you look at guys who have done it in the past, you're talking about Starks. He ain't care. You're talking about guys like Penny. Penny
right.
Johnson didn't care.
Right.
You're talking about guys like Mad Max, Vernon Maxwell. He ain't care.
Right.
You got to have, you know, those guys are always a benefit, you know.
Right.
They're going to hurt you because they're going to take some bad ones. You know, ask any Knicks fans. Starks hit some big shots, but Starks also blew some games. You know, he also shot them out of a couple of games.
And I mean, San Antonio always gets described in this kind of stoic manner, but Ginobili was that.
Mm-hmm.
You never know, I mean, when they went on their run, because Ginobili had moments where he really didn't care, right? And he just went off for like 6, 7, 8 straight buckets, and they, you know, I had the answers for him. So everybody has that cap. You know, and for San Antonio, could that be Ginobili? Can Ginobili find himself? And, you know, who is that? You know, could they cause problems if Ginobili can be Ginobili of old in the playoffs? You know, that's another element of it, because he creates a matchup problem. It's because he's so unorthodox about how he plays and can cause some problems. And the fact that he'll take that ill-advised shot when you don't think he's going to take it when he's feeling it. So he'll put a lot of stress on you. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, those are going to be factors in who's going to, you know, which one of those players are going to step up.
Yeah. So how do you see, you know, looking at the Western Conference, the top four seeds, you know, San Antonio's locked into the one. Then Dallas, LA, and Oklahoma City are kind of playing musical chairs right now. Then you got Denver and Portland, and then you got Memphis and New Orleans. To me, it's a three tiered system out in the West. You got San Antonio, Dallas, LA, and Oklahoma City, I think, in one tier. And that four, I think, are kind of the favorites. One of those four, I think, can come out of the West. Then you got Denver and Portland, who really, I don't think any one of those four want to play, and I think they're a bad matchup for any one of those four teams. And then you got Memphis and New Orleans, who I think are, you know, along for the ride. They're going to make it tough for somebody. They're going to play somebody hard. They're going to play tough. But I think, you know, their first round exit is waiting to happen. But looking now out west, and let's look at that top tier, San Antonio, Dallas, L.A., and Oklahoma City. What do you think are going to be some deciding factors as to who comes out of that top four? We talked about guys who are unsung stepping up. We talked about the crazy stepping up. What are some other factors that you think may play into may play into deciding who comes out of that quartet?
Well, I think, you know, if I take it, you know, just Dallas is going to be, for them, it always comes down to, can they make the key stop? You know, what's always killed Dallas in recent years, and that's what great teams do, teams who win championships, is there's about three or four possessions where you got to get it done. And great teams get it done in those possessions where you got to get those stops. And Dallas has never been able, you know that moment, man. You watch Dallas enough. Dallas has never, it's like they need to stop in the team always. It's just, they never get that stop.
Yeah. Right? Instead of getting a stop, they give up a 4-point play.
And so that's going to be Dallas's. Have they been? And I think that's where they miss, you know, in terms of, you know, with the injuries, about, you know, whether or not, you know, they're going to have that toughness around, you know, being able to get those stops. So I think that's their biggest issue. Oklahoma City is going to come down to when they come up against L.A. or San Antonio, however that all plays out, wherever it's, when you get in that scenario, are they going to be they're going to be able to make some stops, but are they going to be able to – are they going to have that one third or fourth guy who's going to step up and, again, who are not going to be afraid of the moment? And that's where a guy like Nate Robinson, that's where Harden, some of these guys who are willing, who are going to be in situations where they're going to make some play because their depth – and they're going to make their depth a strength against a team like, you know, L.A., where L.A., you know, where you're not going to just be able to get away with putting Fisher on the court and some other stuff on the court, and that we're still not going to take advantage of that matchup. And so can they make that? Because I think defensively, I got the pieces to help them stay there and make that. But, you know, if Durant is taken away from the game, who else is going to step up and make that big play offensively? Lakers, well, I'll go to San Antonio. San Antonio is going to be a matchup issue. But they're there, but where they're weak at right now is that I feel like they don't have enough depth down low to be able to compete against Oklahoma City and the Lakers to be physical, especially now that Oklahoma City's got Perk and where they got Najee Muhammad. You know, so you got some size, and you know Duncan's gonna play big minutes, but can he battle like that? And you know, can your other fellas step in there and help you in terms of providing that interior defense, providing that low post presence? Ginobili and those cats are going to be who they are, but, you know, can you really get physical and control on that glass like you need to? And that's something that's going to be an issue for San Antonio. The Lakers is going to really come down to, you know, I think people like Barnes, you know, Artest has had a little better season down the stretch, but some of those pieces stepping up, kind of doing that. Kobe not dominating the basketball, you know, get some of and can their link continue to be a challenge? Because I don't think anybody out west other than Oklahoma City is really going to be able to challenge that link for the Lakers. And can they capitalize on it enough is going to be the big question. And can some of these other pieces can help them defend on the wing where Kobe can rest? Can Byron step up and allow Kobe to have matches where he can rest when he needs to rest? So, and those kind of things, so he can manage getting to the finals. So I think, you know, as I look at those four teams, those are the things I kind of look at when I try to break down those teams and, you know, to kind of see who might come out the West. Given all that, I think the Lakers are part of it is you can't be hyped, especially when hyped know how to play. it's hard to play. So they, you know, it ain't just that they tall, but they tall and they know how to play. And that's a hard thing to prep for, because you can't simulate that. And you know, I think the only team that really has a shot at them like that is either you catch them early in a matchup with Denver or something like that, or if Oklahoma City is truly ready to take them on. They ain't afraid of Dallas. So, you know, I just think, you know, they ain't afraid of Dallas. And then it'll be a battle with San Antonio, but at a certain point, height is height.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, you long. At a certain point, you can make Tim work too hard for shots. At a certain point, Joby's going to piss Kobe off enough that he's going to make him go off. You know, at a certain point, some of those factors are going to come into play, and they're going to be fine. So that's kind of how I look at that group of those top four.
Okay, okay. Yeah, and I see, you know, Dallas, you know, they've picked up some size. They have some depth in the backcourt. Where Dallas worries me is they're thin on the wings. I mean, they got Marion, they got Corey Brewer, and that's about it as far as wing players. And, you know, I don't think they have a match. They don't have a matchup for Durant. They don't got a matchup for Kobe. They don't got a matchup for Ginobili. So I think that puts them, to me, that pushes Dallas down the list a little bit. And, you know, Dallas facing a Portland in the first round, you know, Dallas is going to face Memphis. If Dallas falls out of that two spot, Dallas needs to stay in that two spot to advance. If they fall out of that two spot and they fall into that three or that four spot, and have to go against Denver or Portland, we may see Mark Cuban shoot somebody on the sideline if his team goes out in the first round again after finishing with one of the top records in the West again. We may see him murk somebody on the sidelines. It won't be pretty. San Antonio, I'm with you. You know, size is big in the league right now. You got to be big down low. You got to be able to cover people one on one. And right now, you know, I think San Antonio is smoke and mirrors their way through this season. And it's some pretty damn good smoke and mirrors, though. But I think it has been a lot of smoke and mirrors to this point.
Can I add that real quick on you? Because
yeah.
You take a team like San Antonio who's really built a philosophy about how they play the game, and anytime you get a coach who's kind of set in his ways about how they play, and then all of a sudden he makes a style change that is so dramatically his core philosophy, that goes back to your point. At a certain point, you're trying to cover up for being old.
Right.
Something about you, and they've never been that way.
Right. Yeah, like I said, it's some legit smoke and mirrors. There's high-quality smoke and mirrors, real high-tech, some CGI going on, but they cover some things up. You know, it's a lot of makeup on that pig. But it's still a pig at the end of the day. I mean, when your second-best big is 6'7", with bad knees, yeah, he's only 22, 23. But he ain't the horse you want. I mean, Dewan Blair isn't the horse you're going to ride. Timmy may got some bullets in the six shooter still left. But how many, I don't know. They still don't have, I mean, Tim can hold people down on the block. He can hold down the paint. Nobody's going to argue that. He's a great defensive player. And defense is one thing that really doesn't age. If you can play defense, you can play defense for a long time. But, on the perimeter, I don't really see them having, you know, I think what helped them when they were winning and when the Spurs were good is when they could balance Tim's inside presence with Bruce Bowen's perimeter defense, being able to take away the opposing team's best offensive threat, but still freeing up Ginobili and Parker to be themselves and not have to expend so much energy playing defense. I don't know if they have that. The George Hill kid is solid, but he's only about 6'2". He don't match up well with a Durant, and he don't match up well with a Kobe. So I think, you know, for me, it's a two-horse race. It's the Lakers and Oklahoma City, and both of them better get out the 3 and 4 spots, or else they may be too beat up, or they may not even be around for the second round. Because, you know, at that 3 spot, you're going against Portland. At that 4 spot, you're going against Denver. Both of those teams could be vulnerable against either one of those teams. I would favor both the Lakers and both Oklahoma City in a series against either one of those teams, no matter how you match it up, whether it's Oklahoma City against Portland or L.A. against Denver or L.A. against Portland, Oklahoma City against Denver. I would favor those teams, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Portland or Denver knocked one of those two teams off. L.A. has been peaks and valleys all season. You know, 1 month, you know, a couple weeks, they look amazing. Then they disappear for 5 or 6 game stretch. And again, their wing play has been super suspect outside of Kobe. Barnes, he brings an element of crazy, which always helps in the playoffs. Maybe he activated some of Ron Ron's crazy for a few games there. But they seem to have lost their stride in the meantime. And man, I don't know about you, but Steve Blake has kind of disappeared in my eyes. At the start of the season, that looked like a real savvy move, and it looked like he was going to be a major piece. And maybe he still will be. Maybe he's going to be one of those sneaky guys who really makes a name for himself and hits some big-time shots and plays a major role throughout this playoff. But at the beginning of the season, it looked like he was going to have a major impact with his team. And he kind of has faded down the stretch. And I don't know if it's because he can't play the D that Phil wants him to play or what's the deal. Or if he's having problems just fitting in. I really don't know what's going on with Blake. But I thought he would be more of a contributor by this point in the season, just given the way things started off. I thought he'd be a more integral part of what they're doing, and he doesn't quite seem to be, in my opinion. But the Lakers, again, outside of Kobe, I don't think they have a whole lot on the wing. But what they do have is they have elite defenders on the wing. I wouldn't necessarily put Barnes in the elite defender category, but Kobe is, and Ron Ron is when he's crazy, you know.
And when I say Barnes, he's an agitator.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't equal elite defender, but that's an element.
Yeah, it is. It's an element you need, because what it does is, And I think this is the beauty of having one of those guys on your team, is that when you're on the road, that cat comes in and the opposing crowd hates him. And they kind of lose track, and that kind of allows some of the other role players to relax. And it kind of takes some pressure off the other role players. Because, you know, role players don't play well on the road, historically, in the playoffs especially. Role players show up at home, they don't really play well on the road. It's just a lot of pressure. It's a high-intensity environment. You know, the other team knows their limitations. These are usually guys who are limited players, and they have a specific role, and it's usually easy to take those things away over a 7-game series. What a guy like Barnes will do is he's going to do something at some point throughout the series to the other team's star player, or star perimeter player at least, that's going to piss off the entire opposing fan base. And the minute he comes in the game, you know, they flipping him off, they cussing at him, and that's going to take pressure off of a Steve Blake. That's going to take the eyes off of, you know, Derek Fisher. That's going to take some of that pressure off those guys and allow them kind of relax and settle into what they're trying to do. And I think that's going to help that team out. And it's also going to bring that team together, because they're going to rally around that. You know, I think sometimes when you go into those road environments and really the opposing crowd is just cheering for their team, and they're kind of ignoring you, and they're just silent when you don't do anything, that kind of bothers guys. Like, it bothered me when I played. When I played and I went on the road, I liked it when the crowd was yelling at me. That helped me. That got me going. You know, sometimes, you know, the old saying, any reaction is a good reaction. You know, whether they hate you or love you, they feel something. And, you know, I think Barnes is going to help that team in that way. Now, he could also, you know, it's a fine line that he has to walk. He could also get his ass suspended for a couple of games and get somebody who's more important suspended for a couple of games coming to his aid. You know, he pissed off the wrong person. You know, Nene clock him in the mouth. You know, Bynum come over and want to swing on Nene. Oh, Bynum got to see the game. You know, so he's got to walk a fine line. The same with Perk, though. Perk is going to bring that intensity. He's going to bring that experience. He's going to bring that edge and that attitude to Oklahoma City. But he's got to walk a fine line of not stepping over that line, because you know the league is going to be hypersensitive about suspending people. They always are. And as these seven-game series get longer and longer, and the longer they go on, the more likely it is something's going to pop off. And I hope a fight does break out. I think the NBA is better when they let cats fight. I mean, it was great in the mid-90s when the Heat and the Knicks hated each other and they fought like every other year. That was great. When the Bulls and Pistons hated each other and they fought. When Cartwright went at Isaiah. It was great. It was good for the game. It was good for the game. You gotta let that go. You gotta let that go. You gotta let guys play. Even in the game this past weekend, when Jermaine O'Neal shoulder blocked LeBron, a couple observations about that particular shoulder block. One, he shoulder blocked LeBron and he flew backwards. LeBron ain't no punk. I mean, the boy's big. And when you get up ahead of steam, it's just a matter. That's an issue of physics. I don't care how tough you are. You ain't tougher than physics, you know. And then when he threw the ball at him, you know, that showed some balls on LeBron's part. But you know, that's what you're gonna see in the playoffs. And that's what I love about it. I love about the playoffs that for once you see these NBA cats really getting after it. You know, me and you kind of went at college basketball fans a little bit about how they love the atmosphere. This is when the NBA gets that sort of intensity and that you know, bleed for the name on your jersey kind of attitude is in the playoffs. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing to watch. So, you know, we're going to ride this out all the way through June, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Yeah, I think that, and I think that's what's so compelling about, you know, all these teams being very good. I mean, when we talk about the Philadelphias of the world who believe, you know, in the first round, they got a chance. Because also, you know, you had the coaching element in it, you know. When you have a Collins like that who's experienced in the playoffs and have the ability to get teams to believe. So you start adding those other elements in, I think that's going to raise the intensity. Because then the expectation there, everybody, like, we got a shot. We're not just a seed. And I mean, even Memphis, I mean, you think about, you know, their talent on their team. Now, the playoff experience isn't all there for everybody. But when you think about the talent of that team, and, you know, this is a good first-time experience, but there's some massive issues they got with their big guys. And so, you know, this is going to create, you know, everybody's going to watch this, especially these first couple rounds, with a level of intensity because everybody is going to have a shot. I don't see what Orlando, like Orlando did to Atlanta last year, just basically beating down and scoring difference in the series, which is amazing. I don't see, even if it's a four-game sweep or a 3-1, I see games that are going to be competitive in all those games, at least through three and a half quarters, you know, where teams are going to be fighting. Because even those teams like Philly and Memphis, they see this as a building block. So they're going to play all the way through because it's part of their building block of learning how to play, and they're going to play all the way to the end because they're trying to build something. And so they're not going to be folding in the towel. And so they're going to be competitive, man. You're going to see some skirmishes. You're going to see some battling because folks believe that they got a shot, which, you know, hasn't been a part of it in years past. So we're going to see.
Yeah, Yeah, I think we definitely gonna see. We definitely gonna see how this goes. It's gonna be a fun ride. Absolutely, it's gonna be a fun ride. I think there's gonna be a couple of upsets out west. I think the East, you know, I think the East is gonna be just a classic playoff battle. It's gonna be some classic games, I think, out East. It's gonna be some real nice series. You know, you got stars up and down. You know, from Chris Paul running an AC team to, you know, Durant, Kobe, Duncan, Dirk. Yeah, Dirk gets so overlooked, man. Dirk is the first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I think people overlook Dirk a lot, and people don't give him credit because his team ain't never done jack when they went in seasons when they should have. But if you look at Dirk's career, man, Dirk is the best 7-foot shooter ever. I mean, hands down, it's not even a contest. You know, it's not even close. So, you know, you got guys like that who are all in this playoff. It's gonna be a hell of a run. It's gonna be a hell of a run. Now, while we was talking about the playoffs, we mentioned guys who are crazy and who have that I don't know no better. You know, they just don't know no better. You know, as my grandmother said, you just act like you don't know no better sometimes. You know, and you need a guy like that on your team. You know, I was getting into this debate with one of my coworkers in respect to Kemba Walker versus Kyrie Irving. You know, they both declared for the draft, and which one of them is going to be the better pro? Now, I posed this question on Facebook. Didn't get a whole lot of takers on it, so I want to get your opinion on it because I think it is. I think you know it's got some legs. You know, it's early in the game, but it's got some legs. So I want to see where people fall on this. Because the Rose Rondo debate is dead. I think Rose murked that one this year. I think Rose took care of that one pretty easily. You know, I think that one's been put to rest. And the Chris Paul D. Will point guard battle is I don't know. I think that was taking some twists and turns. I think we got to see where they wind up. They both kind of are the turning point in their careers. You know, I think people will both say 1 and 1A, and you can put whoever where as far as top point guards. That's another question. Do you think Rose has passed either one of those two as a top point guard in the league?
I think that, you know, this year is a quantum leap for him. And so I think where I would say that he probably did, if he does this again next year, then it's clear. I think this year he's clearly been the top point guard in the league. But whether or not when we start doing the rankings, you know, I always kind of look at it like it's kind of like when they evaluate your 401K or your retirement, you know, and it's like the last three years of your salary tell you how much you're going to get when you retire. You know, I think that, you know, we want to see that over 3 years. I mean, he's taken, four times more threes made. I mean, in terms of his production, I looked at that category. It's gone up significantly this year. So what I would say is, if, you know, if he were to do this again next year, then you clearly have to put him as the top point guard again.
Yeah, I agree. He's a step away from, you know, I think this year he definitely pushed himself. Yeah, I think he had the best season out of any of the marquee players this year. And I think he definitely pushed himself into that conversation. And now I think it's a triumvirate up at the top instead of, you know, just a tandem of Paul and Williams. I think, you know, it's Paul, Williams, and Rose now. And, you know, I think I agree with you. If he has another year like next year, he's either going to be in the top, or it's going to be pretty damn interchangeable. And what will determine it is if the other guys rebound. I think Paul had a pretty slow year this year, and Darren Williams was having a pretty good year until he got moved. So I think both of them kind of had some setbacks this year, just some changes, rather, that kind of affected their usual performance. But, you know, if Paul rebounds and gets back to his 2010 ways and D. Will is at his usual 2010 ways, you know, I think that's the one area where they do beat him is that they can score, but I think at this point in their career, they're better facilitators than he is a little bit. I think they're better facilitators than he is at this point in their careers than he is. But he's just a force. You know, I tell people all the time, he's a LeBron of point guards. But physically, he's just more gifted. Physically, he can do stuff that other point guards just can't because of his size and quickness combination. That size and speed combination that he has just makes him so damn hard to deal with in the open floor. And he's got such unbelievable body control. Like, I've never seen a player with his body control. Never. Where he can get in the air and he makes the toughest shots to seem amazingly easy.
That two-hand dunk they show.
Yeah.
Like, he just keeps going up and up and up. But just like you said, the reverse layup, so the angle of his body when he releases the ball. I mean, and he goes, his way like LeBron is that he goes full speed, reckless abandon, and physical, right? So it's like a power-speed combination he comes, and people move out the way. Move out the way because he's just coming so hard at people, but then he just stops and controls his body. I just watched it like it looked like a video game. Like at the rate that he moves and how he does things, it's like sometimes you have to blink to make sure it's not a video game somebody's playing. I agree with you on that. That he is just set himself apart in that department. And then so the biggest thing is, can he win without dominating the ball? But if they take that away from him, can he still get his team to play at the top level? And that's the part I think you're alluding to for him is the next level. You know, he's definitely taking more threes and been more effective offensively, made himself more well-rounded. Now it's back to how does he control the game in other ways? And that's going to be something that we'll have to see if that develops. And I think that's something that Williams, like you said, and Paul have the ability to do.
Yeah, so there's a little side tangent, you know, I just wanted to get into real quick because I think Rose has put himself in that conversation. Back to what we was going to talk about, which was Kyrie Irving and Kemba Walker. On record, who do you think has the tools to be the better pro right now, given what you've seen? You only haven't seen too much of Kyrie just because he only played like 7 games before he got hurt.
And I think that's the biggest question is that you probably think Kyrie has a greater upside. And the question is, you know, has Kemba, the biggest thing I'm trying to figure out is has Kemba peaked? When I try to look at him, does he have a lot of area to grow, or have we seen the best that he can do? Whereas Kyrie, I haven't seen it, but I don't think we've even come close to see what he can actually do.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's where I'm trying to figure out where he's going to be. I think Kemba, Kyrie, this is the thing, is that I think Kyrie can go to a lot of different places. I think Kemba got to go to the right place. So that might answer.
That's an excellent way to put it.
Because if Kemba goes to the wrong place, he can go from anywhere, from you know, my favorite player, he can go anywhere from being Eric Turner at Michigan, going to play behind Isaiah. everybody thought Eric was everything coming out of college, but then when you get drafted by the Pistons and you find Isaiah, you just there and rot.
Yeah.
So for Kemba, it's going to really come down to where he gets drafted to tell what kind of pro he's going to be versus, I think Kyrie could probably go to a list of teams and be effective. So that might answer the question for me right there.
Yeah, and for me, I think the thing I like about Kemba, and I like a lot of parts of both of their games. What I like about Kemba is that he has that I don't know any better factor, where he ain't afraid to take the big shot. He want to take the big shot. He's looking to take the big shot. That's the type of guy at the point guard spot that a team like the Heat could use. You know, he still has to work on his shot. I think that's the one thing that's the area that he can improve the most. He's got a good handle, and then his point guard skills. If he can, I think that's where, with Kemba, I think that's what's going to affect his ceiling, his ability to transition into being a true point and not a hybrid too. You know, I see a lot of Ben Gordon. And Ben worked in Chicago. Ben ain't worked nowhere else. You know, he ain't working out in Detroit. You know, he worked in Chicago. He's not working out in Detroit. But that's what I see with Kemba is a lot of Ben Gordon where, you know, if you bring him in off the bench and let him run your second unit, or if you got a big guard that you can play him with and let him run off screens and do his thing, he's great. One thing I do see in him, I see a lot of Chauncey in him early on, where it took Chauncey a while to find his niche. Where Chauncey came in with kind of a shoot-first mentality, teams didn't really know what to think of him. He bounced around a lot because of it, but you could always see that someone was there. He just had to get in the right situation. And I see the same thing with Kemba, is that he's going to get drafted somewhere, and maybe it'll be the right situation, maybe it won't. He may have to go through a couple stops before he finds his niche and he finds that right team and that right role. And then everything starts to click for him. You know, he may have to go through a process like that. Where, again, I agree. I think Kyrie, I think part of it is because of his potential and his kind of undeniable potential and he is a natural point. Wherever he goes, he's going to get the opportunity to be the point. You know, where I think Kemba is going to have to beat somebody out. You know, I think whatever team drafts Kyrie is going to draft Kyrie to play him at point. And let him grow into being their point guard. Whoever drafts Kemba is going to draft him and see what they got and see where they can fit him in. Now, how much that's going to impact their long-term careers, I think Kemba's going to be able to contribute right away. Wherever he goes, I think he's going to have an opportunity to contribute right away, and that's because there are things that he does well already, and you know it. You know what you're going to get from him. He can improve his perimeter shooting. He can improve his point guard skills. But you know he can score, you know, and you know he can play the point. Whether you want him running point all game, I don't know. But you know he can give you minutes at the point. So I think, you know, he can be in a situation where he can have an impact right away. I think Kyrie is going to have to grow into his talent a little bit. Because point guard is like playing quarterback in the NFL. It's a learning curve. And, you know, the first year, there's always a ton of turnovers. There's always a ton of mistakes, and I think you're going to see that with Kyrie. I think Kyrie has a higher ceiling. I think Kemba will reach his ceiling quicker. So by year two or three, again, depending upon situation, by year two or three, Kemba's going to start to hit, you know, he's going to start to get to where he's going to be, you know, and he's going to play at that level for a sustained period of time. Whether that's an all-star level or not, I don't know. I think he may be one of those guys who's just right in that rung underneath an all-star if he maxes out.
Yeah, and that's what I think, you know, as I was thinking about, you know, Cleveland and what pieces they might need, that's where you try to think about, you know, they had this terrible season, but they might bounce back, you know, if you're able to get a Kyrie to come in there and you know, have an impact, or even a Kemba coming in to Cleveland to establish something along with some of the, you know, the young talent you already have there. You know, that's a team that if you make the right, you make the right selections with this draft, you know you don't replace LeBron, but it's almost like Denver. You know, you might build a different kind of team that can win. And so, you know, as we start to evaluate, you know, as we start to see how that lottery shift out in terms of, you know, who's where in terms of the line, you know, and start thinking about some of these teams and their ability to bounce back and get back into contention. You know, I'm thinking about Cleveland and all they went through, and so it's, you know, yes, you lost LeBron, but, you know, like Denver, could you be better off in the long run by maybe pulling in somebody who can help you advance and not looking for the greener grass, greener pasture. And that's something they got to decide. But Kemba in Cleveland might not be a bad place, you know, because he's always got a chip on his shoulder. You put it with a coach who got a chip on his shoulder, along with some other pieces, you know, can you start to compete? You know, that's, you know, no, you're not, you know, back to the finals, but can you start to be a competitive team? for some of those other pieces you brought. So, this, I mean, when you start thinking about these players and how GMs might look at those two, I mean, I think your assessment is right on board. But, you know, that again, back to our early conversation, you know, what kind of player can help take you to the next level, or who can set the tone for your organization? I mean, when you're looking at these two players, you're going to have to make some decisions about what they might bring to the team. And then whatever Kemba's going to be at year three, is that going to be okay with you? Because I think the right fit, he could really contribute. You know, the thing about a Kemba is that you really want him to go to one of these playoff teams, because he could really explode in the right system. But he going, and this is the reason, he's going to end up, and if he don't end up in the right situation, and this is where the Chauncey team comes in, you end up with Boston with or in some of these different locations with these different teams that aren't really ready to go to that next level and don't really have the culture to kind of move you to that next level as a player. You got to wait till you get to Detroit to go through that stuff that it would have been nice to go through if you had got with the right team in the first place, right? And I think with Kemba, you know, looking at him, like, couldn't you see him, like, what would happen if he ended up in Portland, understanding what's happened with Roy?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what I'm saying? You know, what would happen if he ended up in Houston? And, you know, just some of these teams that, you know, his.
But there are a couple teams who have two chances at who have two lottery picks. Cleveland's got two lottery picks, and Utah's got two lottery picks. And I think Kyrie would be better served going. I think he would be great for Cleveland, Kyrie, because I think he can be a guy you could build your franchise around, and it would just help. He'd be a great rebound for Cleveland. They need to move on. You know, I think the town of Cleveland needs to move on, and getting, you know, if they the only way they would get Kyrie, I think, is if they got the number one pick, unless he works out horribly. But if they could get a guy like Kyrie, I think, you know, and then fill in with another player later in that first round, I think that would be great for them. Utah, I think, would be a great place for Kemba to wind up, because there's a system in place. There's a culture of doing things. They have bigs who they can work through. I think that would be a good fit for him.
He played well with Devin. It could be interchangeable.
He could come along slowly. You know, he could play well with Devin. Devin could play the two. He could play the one. I mean, you know, I think it would be a nice fit for him. Other places I think would be a nice fit for Kemba. Charlotte would be nice. I think he could easily replace DJ Augustine, who's solid, but they haven't gotten a whole lot out of him. But, you know, other than that, if Kemba doesn't wind up in, you know, in Cleveland or Utah, he could slide out of the lottery. You know, he won't, because, you know, the NBA is about just having enough good players. But there aren't a lot of teams in the lottery who are looking at point guards.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we just talked about it, like L.A. and, you know, what their experience with Steve Blake. You know, you take a guy like Kemba, and, you know, I don't think he's going to slide. He might not slide that far, but if he did, you know, and you play in that triangle, and, you know, you're the guy who can spark your second unit. And,
yeah, he would be perfect to play in a triangle.
You know, he'd be good in that, you know, and, you know.
Because you don't have to have a ton of point guard. You don't have to have traditional point guard skills in a triangle, you know.
And Minnesota is trying to. You know, they use that triangle. He might be good in that, because, you know, Johnny Flynn hasn't, as you and I talked about, he's not really a triangle type guy.
No. And neither is Rubio. Yeah. They need to cash that chip in while they can.
Yeah.
You know, they need to cash that chip in while they can, because in a minute it's not gonna be as the lust is gonna have rubbed off that particular chip if they don't cash it in.
Yeah, they probably could cash that in and move up or collect some picks, you know. But yeah, they got it. So I think that's the thing about him is that you're right. You know, if the right fit don't go, then some of these other players in the draft emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the bigs, or, you know, some of the other needs might emerge for some of these other teams, and then Kemba slides, You know, he becomes, you know, the Rodgers of basketball. He could have been at the top. He slides so far down, you know.
Yeah.
Which for him, you know, it hurts him for the money, for the career, is probably a good move.
Right.
If he ends up with a veteran squad, he's the right kind of guy for a veteran squad.
And not only does he end up with a veteran squad, but he ends up with a veteran squad plus a chip on his shoulder.
That's right.
Because he slid.
That makes it dangerous. Yeah. So, I feel you on that. But, yeah, my thing between those two is that Kemba got to end up with the right team versus Kyrie can go to a lot of different teams.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's an interesting debate that I think we'll be talking about for a while because I think both of them are super talented kids and both of them are going to have a real shot to do well. We won't be debating Jimmer Fredette versus anybody because Jimmer's going to suck. So just mark that down. Book me on that one. If Jimmer's great, Jimmer's great, but I doubt it. Highly doubt it.
Jimmer's another guy who's got very limited teams to be on, but you know, he can park on with, you know, someone like Dwight Howard where he can just find a little spot in the corner.
Hey, work for J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick's still in the league and Adam Morrison is not.
Over that corner and wait for the ball.
Tell you.
But you're not going to get 25 shots.
So the next thing we want to get into, and we can go two ways at this. We can get into Manny being Manny, or we can get into LT Gray. Which way you want to go? You want to go some Tigers, Eldridge? You want to talk about Eldridge, or you want to talk about Manny?
Let's talk about Eldridge. We can end the show with Manny.
All right.
I don't know how much, you know.
So for the listeners out there, Tiger Woods had what was the most publicized fourth place finish ever. I mean, like, I don't watch golf, and I will never watch golf, and I didn't watch none of the Masters, but I caught the highlights later in the day. And by the damn highlights, I thought Tiger won. They were showing so many Tiger highlights, I was like, oh, Tiger must have messed around and won. And look up, the man finished in fourth. They didn't even talk about the night of, all of the talk was Tiger, 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 how well Tiger played, how Tiger charged back. And then it was about McIlroy, how he folded like an old lawn chair. I didn't even know who won until the next morning. I was like, well, who won? The dude who was winning fell down the leaderboard and Tiger shot up the leaderboard. Who won? You know, and I didn't even know it was the dude Charles Schwartzel, whatever his name is, South African. Good for him. We'll probably never hear from him again. Kind of happens that way sometimes with golf, but I swore Tiger had won, man. And I know that the media is waiting for Tiger to wake up out of this slump. Is this the question I got to ask you, is this the most monumental slump? Like, Jordan never had a slump like this, because that's the level Tiger was on. You know, Jordan never had a slump like this. You know, he's in such elite company in his sport that it's hard to even find proper comparisons other than, like, Jordan. I don't even know if there's a football comparison, you know, of a prolonged, just horrible, and I won't say this has been horrible, but it's been very lackluster, a very lackluster run for Tiger. And I don't know if a guy who has been the guy, not only in his sport, but at the level he was at, as far as just being a cultural icon, as an athlete, has gone through a rougher year, a stretch of, in his own sport, on field. There are guys who have had rough years off field socially. He did. but on the field, just the results. I mean, this would be like Jordan coming back from playing baseball and the Bulls not making – him playing the whole season, you know, and the Bulls not making the playoffs.
Well, I think the biggest thing, I mean, in his first, what they say, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, I don't know how they look at it, but Jack won 15% of the tournaments he played in, and Tiger won 30. So I think we got to put it in perspective. I mean, he had a traumatic experience, but he, in golf terms, he still...
Is he a trauma victim? Did he need trauma treatment? You know, he went to Texas Rehab. Maybe he should have went to a trauma clinic.
I think yeah, because anytime you get hit with a 9 iron,
you know, that's going to send you through some kind of trauma. Yeah, you know, so I think there's elements of his game that he demonstrated is coming back. You know, his biggest issue is his putting and getting that a little bit more consistent. That's about concentration. I think one of the things he has to look at doing is playing. I think he's going to have to really evaluate his schedule. I think he needs to – it's one of those things where we talk about in basketball that sometimes just being on the road is an opportunity for you to build cohesiveness with your team. And I think one of the things you got to evaluate, I would say, is his schedule. I think he needs to play more often. I think he just needs to get on the road. I think he needs to get in the rhythm. I think he needs to get around golf. And I don't know how much that's dictated by, you know, his ability to visit with his kids and doing some of those other things. But I feel like right now he needs to get a stretch where he plays more often up to a tournament so that he can be getting a rhythm, getting a routine, and doing some of those things. You know, is he going to be running off the number of majors he did before? I mean, probably not, but I think he's still going to – I think he's going to get Jack's record. And I think that this has really been over the last 8 to 10 months. But that's really, I mean, it seemed like it's 3 years, but it's, you know, it's, you know, I don't think it's too crazy. And I think that what we saw at the Masters is him beginning to get some of his swagger back, realizing that, look, I'm not married. I'm not this way. People are going to judge me for, you know, like his boy Barkley used to say, 50% of people going to like you, 50% of people are not. So I think he gets to past the honeymoon phase where he can get back to being who he is on the course. You know, that's where they started swearing and so on. But he got to be who he is in play. You know, Michael's allowed to be who he is in the heat of the moment. All these other athletes have been allowed to be who they are. So be that, and then when you're away from the golf course, make sure that you're cordial. But in between, when you're on the fairway, be who you are. I think he's finding himself back to that because, again, I mean, sometimes those first couple of tournaments, again, he had the Tyson phenomenon. Like he was on 2020. I keep going back to that because it's like he got the glossy look. You like he caught and you want to put your hand in front of his face and snap your fingers. You know, I think that's something you got to look at. But he is getting his consistency back in his stuff, and the putting is where he's going to continue to work. I mean, I think that's what's killing him is the putting. So it's not the other stuff. The putting is killing him, which is he's got to get back to concentration, but that's the stuff that he wasn't missing on. I mean, 4-foot putts, things like that, 6-foot in, he was making those putts. You know, and that's what's killing him right now in this latest run is the putting. That can be corrected. You know, so it's not an iron stuff. It's not like him not hitting off the tee like he needs to. He's in a position to get birdies and eagles. He's just not making the putts he used to make, which I think, it's like shooting free throws, shooting jumpers. At some point, you can get back on rhythm. So that's how I look at it like that. I believe he's going to win one of the majors this year. And that'll click it. I think
I feel the law of averages says he has to. He's got to win a major this year. I mean, he has struggled immensely.
I think that's why he needs to play more often, because sometimes you just need to win the San Antonio Open just to win, right?
Yeah.
you know, sometimes you need to go and play some of those games on courses you normally wouldn't win just to get your victory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for him, when you had that break in your schedule, you need to do something to shock your system to play more often. I think he hasn't decided to do that, but I mean, somebody needs to sit down with a game plan and say, look, you need to, it's like a boxer, you've been away, it's like, you need to box some more tune-up fights. You just can't wait for big championship fights. We need to get you in a rhythm of training and playing and training so that when we get to Vegas for the big fight, we've worked on enough things to get you ready. And so, you know, Tiger, I mean, I'm not a big-time golfer, but, you know, I heard people talk a little bit more about this, and I agree with it. I just think he needs to reevaluate his schedule and play more often and not, yeah, you want to win a major, but you just got to know what it feels like to win. Then, because that's part of it. That's the psychology of it. Then you can talk about winning a major.
Mm-hmm.
No, win the Phoenix Open. That's not bad.
Get that Phoenix Open win.
You know, some of that stuff.
Get the Milwaukee Open. Get that W.
Like we talk to students about scholarships. Don't always try to fight and get that Gates millennium. You know, sometimes just getting that Rotary scholarship is a good place to start and work your way up to the Gates.
Right.
Learn how to write them applications.
Mm-hmm.
Get into the rhythm of applying. You know, and then when it's time to get that Gates, you got the rhythm, you got your referees ready, you got all that. And I think that's the same thing with this. He's got to get back into a rhythm of just playing, being around the guys, being in the locker room, getting away from all that other stuff, getting media used to seeing him, you know, diffuse them a little bit, you know. But I hear some of these media folks reacting on how he reacted and his attitude and stuff like that. Some of these folks are just getting carried away.
Yeah,
overanalyzed.
I think people just got it out for him at this point. They really like he's kind of, you know, I think people have crossed over to the other side now where it's okay to not like him. Where I think before you were really jeopardizing your ability to be in the sports world if you didn't like, as far as the media goes, if you didn't like Tiger, if you said something negative about Tiger, he was almost blacklisting himself by doing that. And I don't think people are worried about that so much anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think be critical of him, but be critical on stuff that's not petty.
Right.
I think that's where, you know, media types get full of themselves around that. You know, when you need to put the mirror up to yourself, you know, and put the mirror up to the sport. Tiger, the one that got caught, he got overindulged. But golf has been notorious for the behavior.
That's right.
You know, and so don't think, you know, Gary Player, I'm not taking this, don't think some of these other folks weren't engaged in these activities out there on the tour. Because golf has a history around this. You know, now Tiger took it to a whole another level. Sometimes he supersized it. He introduced a whole new element to it. but it's been part of the culture. So if we're going to criticize it, let's criticize the culture of other folks. And some of you folks who haven't been caught, you need to straighten yourself up before you get caught. I mean, let's don't talk about it as a Tiger issue. Talk about it as a golf issue as well. You know, or is it because, you know, it's like how we view white-collar crime. And because these guys wear nice shirts and golf and go to country clubs, they don't do these things. You know, if you were NBA, you know, we did an entire Sports Illustrated article on NBA.
Yeah.
You know, about, you know, their infidelity. You know, golf is notorious, but now it's a Tiger Woods issue.
Right. Golf. Yeah. So, you know, and that's the underbelly of the golf world that I think, you know, again, it's the white collar athlete, if you want to call it that, just like the white collar crook, you know, you don't hear about those guys. You really don't. And Tiger got caught because, you know, things just exploded for him, and there was no way that he or his team could put out the flame for the eyes of the world to turn. You know, he was literally caught with his pants down. And there was not much he could do about it, you know. He tried. I mean, when the whole incident went down, it was a couple of days before anybody really knew what was going on. You know, it was an accident, and you know he was in the hospital, but he was okay, and they went talking to the police, and you know it was just a whole lot of, you know, cloak and dagger type of behavior going on around the whole situation.
And let's be frank. Before Tiger, the infidelity, whether it happened or not, might have happened with so-and-so from the golf club, the country club, or the local person. Tiger was with the supermodel, the porn star. I mean, Tiger went to such a pop level, his access to people,
yeah.
You know, and hanging with my, you know, his access to a whole different world, you know, is part of that taking it to a whole other level.
Yeah.
You know, in a way that prior, you know, pre-Tiger, where, you know, these things were happening, you know, when you're at the Phoenix Open, someone you met at the bar and whatever. You
right,
know,
you're talking to the media assistant.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not, Josie Wawa from, you know, the porn video, or, you know, or a, you know, superstar from a TV movie that you're at a party with. You know, it wasn't, you know, that, I mean, Tiger took it to a whole other, because of the exposure he had.
Mm-hmm. Because he was on that level. And I think that's when you put it in perspective, you know, there are only a few other people who you could compare Tiger to as far as where he was at. You know, there's Mike and maybe Ali in his day as far as popularity and notoriety and dominance within his sport. But then after that, like, there's no there's nothing else there. I mean, there's nobody else in that category. And so when you talk about a guy who's at that, who's in that stratosphere, having an extended low like this, and the fact that the low was brought on in such a traumatic and you know, in such a traumatic way, I think, you know, that also magnifies everything that's going on.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, I think he's close to putting it all together. I think the farther you get away from the start of his comeback, where now it's kind of routine for him, you know, I think that's where it's going to click. It's like when you try too hard, you know, if you go into a batting slump, when you just go out and start hanging with the fellas and just stop thinking about it and just start swinging the bat, that's when you start hitting. You know, so I think part of what he's going to have to do is get into such a routine where he's just playing and things just start clicking. And, you know, people, you know, some of the questions they asked 3 or 4 months ago, they're not asking anymore. You know, cause, you know, and the more that people kind of accept he's in his routine, the better off he's going to be back. So it's just, I think for him, it's just about getting in a routine, getting away from all this stuff. And I think playing his second Masters, I think is going to help out a lot, because he's just gone full circle for the year. He's played his year, played his second Masters with 4 sets. So now I think he can begin to get back into a routine and start to play it. And, you know, he got some young cats challenging him. So, you know, he's going to have to kind of pull it together. But I think, you know, when he's at 35, 36, I mean, I think he's got plenty of good years as it relates to golf, because of the way he keeps his body in shape, his regimen, all these things that, you know, a lot of these folks back in, you know, who historically haven't been doing with their bodies. You know, usually play around and you go out, you know, drinking a few beers and you're doing, you're not working out with a trainer, you're not looking at your diet, you're not doing all that stuff that, you know, these, you know, Tiger's training like he's getting ready for football. You know, and so I think that's where you're going to start to see some of this come back. And it's just a matter of him, you know, carrying this momentum that he had towards the end of this. He made a 31 on the front nine and, you know, had some stretches down the stretch. So it's just about how he can do it. So, I mean, his biggest thing is, has he thought about playing more frequently so he can keep his rhythm going? So as you get older, is it about trying to also make sure you can keep yourself in rhythm? You know, whereas when you were younger, you could just overpower a course. Now you got to be a little sharper. So, you know, do you need to keep playing every couple of weeks in a way that you haven't been playing to keep your sharpness? You know, those are the things that, you know, managing, not sharpness is not just managing the course, but managing the media around that too, where you just get to a point where that, you know, you're able to manage all the stuff around playing that allows you to get back to your flow. So that's the kind of stuff I think he needs to think about, you know, whether or not he does it or not, you know, from up to him.
Yeah, you know, Tigre's got, he's falling far, but, you know, I think he's going to rebound. I think he's going to rebound. I think he's going to come back. You know, I just thought it was amusing how ESPN took the opportunity to really pump up his fourth place finish. Because I think the sport of golf is not nearly as interesting as, because I was sucked in. You know, I was watching these highlights like, man, did he win? Did he win? Did he win? Just to find out he finished fourth. So, you know, he moves the needle, and he has a huge effect on his sport. And his sport is not the same. There's not nearly the same amount of attention. And I'm sure there's not the same amount of money circulating around the sport when he's not on top.
and that's part of that is also golf's fault. Not, you know, these young kids like McIlroy who are coming through, who are really good players. You know, golf has got to learn from the woes of places like hockey, where you didn't spend enough time promoting your some of your up and coming stars. You know, they're putting all their eggs in the tire basket, and at some point he's gonna retire. So, you know, they need to, while they have Tiger here, start to promote some of these young guys who are hitting it far, who were influenced by Tiger, who have developed the same kind of game. They need to be doing a better job of promoting some of those players.
Are they missing the boat, or is just nothing there? Because honestly, I'm not checking for McIlroy. I'm not finna watch golf because of McIlroy.
I think part of it is you don't know enough about their personality. You don't know enough about who they are. And I think, now whether it sticks or not, golf needs to do it. Because what you're basically saying, when Tiger leaves, we back to where we were. If I'm golf, this was self-interest in this, can we use this as a way to begin promoting some of these other players? You have to figure out how to make that happen. You know, because these cats are young, they're 21, they're kind of flashy. You got to figure out how to make that, you know, do they have some crossover appeal? You got to figure that out. Or you just sit back. I wouldn't sit back and wait. I'd figure out how could I create that crossover appeal? How could I get them in space where folks see them in different environments? I mean, that's part of promoting the game. They got to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a mistake if they wait. You know, leverage Tiger being here as a way for promoting some of these other players. You know, and that's what they're going to do. We're not talking about some of these guys. These are young guys. These are 21-year-olds. These are cats that could have appeal to a young audience, you know, who they just haven't taken the time to do anything with. And that's something that the golf game is going to have to do. You know, to lay down and not do it, you know, I wouldn't do that. But
yeah,
that's what they decided to do.
Yeah, I think, yeah. You know,
McDonald's.
It's an interesting conundrum they got, you know, because you know, they could promote some of those guys all they want. I'm not buying it.
you might,
but that's me. You know, that's me. I'm not a golf guy, though. I'm not a golf guy. They may be able to pull in. And that's the other thing. I don't know if they're ever going to be able to pull in the casual fan. I think there was a novelty around Tiger, you know, looking African-American. I don't know what he calls himself or how he classifies himself, but he looks African-American. He looked black. So, I think there was a novelty about him. I think he opened golf up to some people who may not have ever paid attention to golf before. And to me, McIlroy would just be another white dude playing golf. You know, no matter how interesting he is, you know, I mean, John Daly's probably one of the most interesting. I mean, how much more interesting can it get than a dude who's got his own face? You know, a dude that goes DJ Cool Herc on his own face.
I can agree, but then I also would say, you know, these cats listening to hip-hop, these cats are doing some different things. How might you rebrand them in different space?
Golf don't want no part of no hip-hop. They just don't.
They need to up into it. They need to figure something out.
And that's why, you know, Tiger had some of the success that he had, man, because he didn't even touch that. He didn't even go into that realm. You know, he left that to the Iversons and the Rashids. He didn't even go there.
Was on his iPod. You're not going to see it. Well, no. Manny B and Manny, that's 60 seconds. What are we going to do? Manny B and Manny? I'm just going to say Manny don't care.
Man, Manny don't give a damn. Manny don't give a damn, man. Manny just. Man.
Manny don't care, we don't care.
Hey, man, as soon as he got the news, he was like, well, I'm retiring. I was retiring anyway.
And he just walked behind the Green Monster.
Right.
Gotta have his name. I'm going to walk behind the Green Monster.
Soon as the news came out, man, he was like, yeah, I'm done.
Talking about the new Green Monster, and I'm urinating on everybody.
Right. I don't need to do no interviews. I don't need to do no press conference. I'm just retiring. You know, I'm going to Spain. I'm retiring. I'm going to Spain.
I'm going to hang out.
Oh, man. But that's all we got for this week, man. That's the show. Thank you for listening. The Real Sports Guys, check us out next week. We'll be here same place, same time. Peace. All right, we up the air.
That was good.
Oh, yeah.
we gave Manny the proper tribute.
Yes. Oh, man.
There's nothing to say about him.
Yeah, man.
Teammates, he just said, I'm out. Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, he said, I ain't answering no questions. I ain't going to do no little press conference. I ain't apologizing. I ain't doing none of that. I'm just quitting. The jig is up.
Take all the gear with me. And, I'm going to take the gear with me so I can wear it. That's it.
Right. Right. Manny just said, the jig is up. I'm out. I'm out, take, boys.
Take off me. I'm done.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah.
Now, this has been good. So I'm going to try to work on to see what my guy is able to do for next week. And then I still got to try and line up getting Jeff and some of the other folks on. I mean, they'll do
okay.
It. I just got to tell them what time.
Okay. I'm going to try to keep the page. I'm going to try to keep updating, just putting little things out on the page and seeing if we can get people to bite, get people talking on the page and at least coming to the page for different content. I'm going to put some videos and stuff up. I found a couple funny videos of some players in games, blunders that I'm going to put up just for laughs. So stuff like that, you know, just to get people hitting the page on Facebook and getting views and stuff.
And you can do those short kind of submissions on Tumblr too.
Yeah. Okay.
You can do quotes. You can do audio. Come up on Facebook. It'll probably come up on my news feed, but I haven't quite figured out how to link it back to our Real Sports page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll come up on our Twitter account. So you can also do those things on our Real Sports Guys page to build content there as well. And then I've been doing polls, trying to get people to vote. So we got, you know.
Yeah, and I think what I use, when I usually get responses, is by tagging people. When you tag folks, they're usually more likely to at least look at it and comment on the content. So that's always been my...
Yeah, even with the polling I've done, specific inviting of people, and I tag folks as well on that. So I'm trying to get them to give me responses. A couple of people responded to some of the polls I put out there just by, and I remind them to vote. So that they put a comment in, but then I remind them to vote on it. So I'm trying to get some, you know, we keep working that.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. Well, all right, man.
I got to get over to the Dean's Leadership Council meeting tomorrow, so.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Take care.